We need an intro properly befitting our next guest. It's Michael Hurley of WBZ Boston joining us this afternoon. Mr. Hurley, how are you today?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Although I've got a little craving. I wonder if you could help me out here. I could really go for a slice of cheese.
It's a sensitive topic around the workplace. You know, the person will I'll protect the person's identity, the cheese bringer. But I had to put that one out to the Twitter masses and see, you know, that I'm not crazy, and I'm not. Everyone agrees you can't bring one slice of cheese in a Ziploc bag to work. It makes people uncomfortable.
Right, because you wonder, you know, what's the rest of the story?
It's just not how God intended a slice of cheese to be transported from one place to the other. It's just unnatural.
Oh, I agree completely. Well, good, because for a moment I was worried that it was you, and I was trying not to judge you if you were the cheese bringer.
Thankfully not. I tried to keep it ambiguous so that no one knew which side of the street I was on. I think I did an okay job playing it objectively because I wanted accurate polling results, and I like to think we got them.
I think so. You walked it right down the middle. I wasn't sure, so I tried to express what was in my heart when it came to cheese. Well, let's see. A lot going on here. Let's start with the Red Sox. They've been doing their thing at Fenway for the last couple of days. We were chatting in the break here, a much better product when they were out west.
Yeah, you know, I watched every one of those games. I didn't expect to. Starting on opening day, I was like, oh, I'll watch a few innings. I watched the whole game. I watched the extra innings games. I don't know. They were fun to watch out there. They were playing good baseball, crisp defense, great base running, you know, good starting pitching. Everything was clicking. And I know it's only been two games since returning home, but, man, it has been just a kick in the stomach followed by, you know, a kick in the rear end the next day. So it's been an unpleasant welcome. And, you know, I think we expected the Orioles to win this series, but it's just been sort of an ugly I think there's too much scar tissue in Boston from the past couple of years of just being terrible that anytime anything goes wrong, everyone's just going to kind of say, like, oh, here they go again. It's sort of like the 90s again in that respect.
And I think it kind of started, and you talked about this on social media, it started with that presentation on Monday, and as I turned it on, I thought, what? Don McLean's American Pie? And are they going to, please tell me we're not going to get to pictures of Tim and Stacy Wakefield just as he sings, "This'll Be the Day That I Die." Oh.
I hated that ending in particular. Like, it was bad to begin with. To just run highlights with American Pie made no sense to me. There's no real connection to the team. There's no meaning to it. We can watch highlights whenever we want. The actual team was there, hiding behind a banner, and then they just kind of... the first pitch of Brianna Wakefield to Jason Veritek I thought was great, a great moment. You know, having all the players surrounding the Wakefield kids, I think was you know, a really nice moment. I don't want to overlook that, but I just think if you're going to have a celebration and all these guys are going to fly in from all over the country, to just have them kind of trot out and just disappear, I thought was stupid. You know, all that time you spent playing American Pie, you could have had something better than that. I don't know what, but literally anything other than just walking out and then walking off. It was just kind of, there was no ceremony. It was just sort of, oh, there those guys are. See you later.
I wanted to, if I was going to see the highlights, I wanted to hear either, you know, Dave O'Brien or Joe Castiglione on the call. I wanted to hear from Jerry Remy, and I wanted to hear the voices of those players.
Yeah, they're not doing a great job with this. I remember, was it last year that we were all talking about Don Arcillo not being invited to the Jerry Remy thing and all that? Like, they got to get their ceremony game back on point to the Dr. Charles Steinberg era, because these are not living up. Though I will say the 05 ring ceremony with Terry Cashman out there singing was not the most captivating entertainment spectacle. So, I don't know. Maybe it's just not their forte.
So with this team, obviously we knew they were going to struggle. They gave us a little hope with the way everybody pitched and played out on the West Coast. But the reality is they don't have a lot. And now hit with some pretty key injuries. Are they doing the right thing for the long term by at least locking up some of this young talent?
I mean, it's not bad to sign Sidon Rafaela to that to that deal. It's just, it seems like they're trying to protect themselves against him potentially becoming Mookie Betts and thus becoming very expensive at a certain point. And it's just like, no, guys, you had Mookie Betts. He is a one-of-one generational player, and you screwed it up. So to try to sort of fix that with other players that aren't him, I don't quite know that it's necessary. Like, there's a chance that Rafael never becomes a real big league hitter. And, you know, for all of the great defensive plays he's put forth so far, he's had an equal number of bad plays. You know, the drop in Anaheim stands out. He took a on opening day at Fenway, just that ball in center field to left center. He had just a terrible route on. So, I mean, there's growing pains. Obviously, he's 23. But I don't know, after 38 games, you have to sign him to a long-term deal. It just feels like an organization that it continues to lack a clear philosophy and direction. And now they're like, oh, well, the Braves have done it, so it must be a good idea. But I don't know that it's necessarily, that they're showing great vision so much as they're like, let's try it and see what happens. That seems to be their credo when it comes to anything with the front office.
Yeah, I think you're right. Michael Hurley, WBZ, with us here on Downtown. I have no idea. What do you think could and might happen to the Bruins in the postseason?
Well, I know that the way it's unfortunate the playoff structure is such that they'll probably end up playing Tampa Bay in the first round, which is some reward for finishing first place in your division, to get a multi-time cup champion rolling in round one. But it's sort of the way it is. So I don't know. I know Tampa is not what they used to be, but that's going to be a heck of a series. If they play Florida, I think they're going to get beaten again. I know they've played really well against Florida during the regular season, but there's just something about Florida being tougher than them. And in the seven-game series, I think that is how they did it last year, and they have enough talent. I'd have to check on some of their injuries if they'll be back in the playoffs. I assume by the second round, some of them will be. We know Carter Verhaeghe killed them last year. So the Panthers beat them last year, and I know the Bruins are up 3-1 in that series and were the best regular season team of all time. But I walked away from that series saying, well, the Panthers certainly outplayed them, so they're better. So it's going to be a tough road for the Bruins to get just to the conference finals. And then, you know, we could assess that there. But if I was a betting man, I wouldn't love their chances. They just seem to be good, but not scary. And I don't know if you saw the NHLPA player poll came out yesterday, and they asked players around the league, the forward you're most scared to face, the defenseman you're most scared to face, and the goalie you'd want in a big game to win a game for you. And no Bruins were in the top five of any of those categories. And I think it speaks to, you know, that come playoff time, they don't necessarily have an overwhelming, you know, force of nature to dominate that scares other teams. And it might end up costing them again.
Let's talk a little Patriots. Speaking of signing talent, was signing Kyle Duggar to an extension a good move for the Pats?
I actually like that one, and I know people, you know, the safety market crumbled this offseason. We know as soon as they placed the transition tag on Duggar, like five or six safeties were released within 2 days, thus negating the need for any transition tag. But in whatever, the dollar amount's a lot, I think it pays them something like the sixth or seventh highest paid safety. I think it's good because this is a team that lacks culture. You know, they lack that championship. There aren't many Patriots left who have won or played in Super Bowl. It might be down to two or three guys left. So you need to establish that culture. And if you identify this player as someone who can be that leader, who can be on and off the field, sort of, you know, a captain for everyone to look to, and you reward him with this contract, I think that's good for, you know, the organization. So, whether he's the type of player, I mean, he's not going to intercept many passes. He's not that type of player, but he's a hard-nosed player. He has a lot of respect in the locker room. And now he has the contract that he earned. So I actually like that one. I know maybe opinions might vary, but I think it's always good to have that example in your locker room.
2 weeks away from the draft, what do you think? Do they go with Drake May? Do they stick with offense in the first couple of picks, or do they trade down?
It's tough. It just feels like they're going to take the quarterback. I think the smarter move in the long term would be if a trade-down opportunity presented itself to take that, get an offensive tackle, get skill position players, like load up as much as you can. I know that you probably, if things go right, won't be at number three again and thus won't have that swing. But it just, feels like an incomplete team. And so you can get the quarterback, and if he ends up being an all-time great, then it won't matter. And you can figure it out later. But just the odds are he won't be. And the odds are you'll put a kid in a position that isn't ideal. So it's easy for me to say. And we've also watched Bill Belichick run this team. And something underrated about that is that nobody had more job security for as long as he did. So you could do things like that and not worry about it. The guys running the team now might not have jobs come May. You know, Robert Kraft said, we'll assess after the draft how it looks in the front office. So these guys kind of have to take a quarterback, I think. Whether that works out or not, I don't know. I mean, everyone has their opinions on these different guys. I think they're going to take whether Daniels or May is available. McCarthy just doesn't seem like a number three pick to me. So I do think they'll go that route. I don't know that it's necessarily best long term, but it just feels like the organization is in that direction, sort of top to bottom.
And is Jacoby Brissett a guy who can be a good mentor to a young quarterback?
Yeah, I mean, that's even as a rookie, he kind of, I think, if I'm not mistaken, he had the nickname like the Pied Piper. Like, everyone's followed him at NC State. He's just that type of person. He's served in multiple roles. You know, he played decently for the Browns, knowing that Deshaun Watson was going to come back from suspension. He's another good person to have in the locker room. I will say this. Let's say they draft a rookie who's not ready to start, and we all have to cover a Jacoby Brissett-led team. It'll be good for maybe the guys in the locker room. It'll be bad for us because it's going to be boring offensive football. He's just not going to light it up for us on the TV every weekend. So if they do draft a quarterback, I think everyone should hope he's ready to start in week one, because that's just setting up for another, I want to be, you know, polite, but just flat out boring offensive football season. So let's see.
Who's the most valuable Patriot right now?
The most valuable Patriot. I mean, I might go off the board and say like David Andrews, just because they've been so spotty on the offensive line. Their tackle play last year was horrendous on the right side and up and down, to say the least, on the left side. They've had rookies slide in at different guard spots. And it's one thing to have bad tackle play. Offenses can somewhat overcome that. If you're terrible up the middle, you just can't even run an offense. So to have, you know, David, who wasn't perfect, he allowed some sacks, missed some blocks, but I think he was a very good, you know, stabilizing force in the center of the offense. If he were to say tomorrow, you know what, my body's not ready, I got to step away, I got to retire, that would be devastating news for the Patriots. So maybe not the most exciting pick, and maybe indicative of where the Patriots are, but I'm going to go with the center.
It's Michael Hurley, WBZ Boston. Michael, great talking with you as always. I hope no one comes to work tomorrow with like a single olive in a Ziploc bag.
You know, you never know what you're going to find in the company fridge. You just got to always keep your head on a swivel. And if you see someone walk in with cheese in a bag, just sort of walk in the other direction.
Well, thank you for keeping us alert to those small threats that, you know, they seem benign, but when that's in the company, you've always got to be alert and ready for things.
Yep. Duck and roll and just head in the other direction. You don't want to be there for
it. Nope, not at all. Thanks, Michael. Have a great weekend. Talk with you soon.
You too. See ya.
Michael Hurley, WBZ, with us here on Downtown.